Welcome! This is the Big Brain Conversation. I'm your host, Marcus Holm, together with two other co-hosts.
Arnav Bhargav.
Baj Farago.
We keep moving. And just so you know, we're going to avoid using abrasive language. And we're going to be generally more careful about our words in regards to the global reach of our podcast. We'd like to thank our sponsor, No One. No One's sponsoring us for this podcast.
No One is a great company. They sell nothing.
Yeah, for free.
They have supported us throughout this endeavor.
I'd like to thank.
You can follow our code.
You can follow our code, the BBC, to get a 20% discount on absolutely nothing. So help yourself, and you know, this Christmas, go back to your family, go back to your spouse, tell them how much you love them, and go back to your ex-wife. Maybe she'll take you back. Maybe it wasn't your fault. You divorced. Maybe it was your kids. Think about it.
Moving on. Hong Kong.
All right, so we're going to be talking about a very serious topic, which is the Hong Kong protests that have been going on for a very long time now. And, right, you want to start off the...
Well, yes, I'd love to. So, first, to understand Hong Kong, we need to know the history of Hong Kong. And, well, the roots of the conflict came from a Sino-British joint declaration signed when the People's Republic of China and the United Kingdom decided to agree on this thing. Yeah. When was it? I tell you now that it was the 19th of December, 1984, in Beijing. Well, the declaration stipulates that the sovereign administrative agreement of then British Hong Kong, after July 1997, when the release of the new territories were set to explore, according to the convention of for the extension of Hong Kong territory.
All right, and obviously the country itself is in a one country, two system thing. It's a constitutional principle formulated by a Chinese person.
Deng Xiaoping.
The parliament leader of the People's Republic of China, PRC, for the reunification of China during the early 1980s. He suggested that there would be only one China, but this Chinese regions such as Hong Kong and Macau, which could retain their own economic and administrative systems. While the rest of the PRC uses the socialism with Chinese characteristic system, under the principle, each of the two regions could continue to have their own governmental system, legal, economic, and financial affairs, including trade relations with foreign countries, all of which are independent from those of the mainland.
So I guess now we should go right into how this whole issue started, which is the anti-extradition law amendment bill. It's also called the ELAB movement, which began opposing the fugitive offenders amendment bill. And the first protest happened on the 31st of March, with an attendance of 12,000 pro-democracy protesters. According to the organizers, the Civil Human Rights Front, the CHRF, police put the peak fugitive at 5,200, but that's the police, and we all know that there is a little bit of a difference when it comes to the local police force.
Mm-hmm. You want to carry on?
Yeah, so sure. What did the Fugitive Offenders Amendment Bill actually mean? So in the February of 2019, the government proposed changes to the fugitive laws, establishing a mechanism for case-by-case transfers of fugitives by the Hong Kong chief executive to any jurisdiction with which the city lacks of a formal extradition treaty, which it claimed would close the legal loophole. B- Beijing's involvement in the proposed bill caused great concerns in Hong Kong, and the concerns include an opposition which expressed fears that the city would open up itself to the long arm of the mainland Chinese law, putting people from Hong Kong at risk of falling victim to a different legal system, one that they would not be so sure of. And it therefore urged the government to establish an extradition arrangement with Taiwan only, and to sunset the agreement immediately after the surrender of Chiang Tong-kai. Shortly, it could be summed up as basically too much influence from China.
Mm.
And the American Chamber of Commerce in Hong Kong, AmCham, pointed out that the mainland criminal process is plagued by deep flaws, including lack of independent judiciary, arbitrary detention, lack of fair public trial, lack of access to legal representation, poor prison conditions, etc. The government responded to the business chamber's concerns by exempting 9 of the economic crimes originally targeted. But this is just the introduction to the foreign response.
Mm. right, yeah. So just looking at the timeline of things, it has been going on since very actively since July, and right.
Yes.
And today in December 8th, a mass march was held as protesters kept up the pressure of getting what they needed. A lot of what you hear about Hong Kong is just the brutality of the police there, and I mean, it is very, I don't know what to say.
But it exemplifies what the Hong Kongers stand against. So what we can see here is mainland China trying to extend its territory. And by doing this through legislation, through tape. Now, what we can also see is how the Hong Kongers strongly oppose this. But due to the influence of mainland China, these protests have been going on for so long, and because mainland China just isn't ready to budge, which is one of also their main concerns, because mainland China isn't democratic, which infers some inherent problems, as well as the aforementioned police brutality.
Yeah. I mean, that is pretty clear. But I'm not so sure about. Well, yeah, China is trying to obviously expand its territory and everything, but I don't think it will. I don't think the situation is going to legislatively. It's not going to improve, right? It's not likely. It's pretty evident that the Chinese won't budge with.
Carrie Lam's resignation, for example.
Yeah, and you see also that this is. If we wanted to predict the future for it, it's probably going to take a long process until something decisive happens. But we see the motivation for mainland China to make this move. Hong Kong is a huge business city, and there are plenty of opportunities. And that's also a reason why it's hardly defended by internationally and the Hong Kongers also, because it is supposed to be an example of democracy and Western style government, and so the influence of China spreading there is not a good sign for everybody, for anybody in Hong Kong and international dealers.
Yeah, it could also stand as an example of Western-style governance being overtaken by the Eastern-style governance, at least in Asia, as China's influence grows.
I'm not so sure about the the economic implications of this. I mean, China itself has experienced a huge period of growth throughout the 2000s, until now even. And I think, obviously, the protest has stifled the region's prospects of making a lot of money, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not so sure about the economic implications of such a long-term protest that's been going on in Hong Kong. Might want to look more into that later on.
Yeah. Well, how well do you guys see it? Like, how what do you think the actual effectiveness of the riots and the protests are? So, do you think these will actually be useful and effective in accomplishing this, some sort of content?
Good question.
Well, yeah, that is a very good question. You want
to? Yes, I'd also like to start off with saying, like, what is best for change? So the Hong Kongers' main way of finding change is through riots that have become increasingly more violent, though not to an extreme extent. However, it is always in the back of our minds that we think, what is best for change? Now, in Hong Kong, we can see a government that is unable to see its own mistakes and immovable when it comes to the main points that the Hong Kongers bring up. But then what can the Hong Kongers actually do but go to the streets and bring their Molotov cocktails, because the government doesn't listen and will never listen, maybe?
I think, well, what I think is, if it's a transitory thing, if it's the duration of these riots also play a role here, and that is because if what happens to the actual the nation itself is that it weakens when people are rioting, obviously, and the economy itself does not, it becomes stagnant, and if the issue goes on for too long, we cannot expect, the whole country will stagnate, and it's not a good idea for it to do that for so long. So there needs to be an actual discussion and regarding
But that is the aim of a riot. So when you riot, your aim is to make the government feel pressured because of the stagnation that you mentioned, and therefore they are more incentivized to fill the aims of the Hong Kongers. Now we can see that China, being a really large economy,
right,
it won't budge.
If it goes on for too long, right, it is an inherent problem that if there's no good coming out of this, right, if it's going on for too long and you're experiencing extreme police brutality such as this, is it a good idea to... I
think yes. Even just for the principle of standing against autocratic or authoritarian rulers, it is. Now, why, like, inherently? Well, of course, democracies don't always come with the benefits. However, they are, in my opinion, a superior way of governance, mainly because the government is representative of the population, and by government mandate, they protect the people, and then the social contract. Now, we can see here that the government is not doing that, and therefore, the Hong Kongers, out of principle, should go against mainland China, if only to stand against authoritarianism.
Yeah, well, I think it's a good point that, yeah, this is how democracy is supposed to work, and Hong Kong is supposed to be a democratic state. But you brought up before that the government seems not to make any changes and seems to stand by their point. And there has been some speculation as of mainland China having influence over the Hong Kong government. And, well, of course we can only speculate, but it's if mainland China has some sort of connection to the Hong Kong government, what can we do, really? Because the mainland China is not democratic. And so even if they have to hold the election, it's not 100% sure that that's a democratic decision is going to be made, or that an actual representative will get to power in the future, which will have to happen sooner or later. So in a way, one can say that, okay, the protests can go on, but how long? Because sooner or later there's going to be a new election. We don't know when. And we don't know if it's going to be all democratic or not, either.
But then the option is, the other option is to what? Lay down and die? And I don't see that as a feasible option for the people of Hong Kong, mainly because there is at least some integrity towards their aims that point out critical flaws in the mainland politics that need to change. And even if a change that they achieve is incremental at best, it'd still be worth it,
yeah,
I'd say.
It proves that point, and also I would say that that's why they need help, and that's why change has to happen rather fast. Not that it doesn't have to happen next week, but change has to be made rather fast, and that's why there is a need for foreign help. And of course, foreign help comes in the form of the UN, and we all know the history of UN not doing too much. And so there is sort of a pressure on the protesters to pressure the government to make actual change, and pressure foreign representatives to take action, I would say.
Yeah, I'd also like to add that foreign aid from a government or the UN is something that I see as at least, if not unfeasible, really hard, because a country would have to directly meddle with Chinese domestic policy, something that is seen with extremely negative the eyes, and gives China all the leverage to call out for some kind of like dog diplomacy that we see. But also the UN, we can see that China could also just veto, because they are one of the large states there, and the leverage that they hold within the NATO.
And they're getting even more leverages. People are not protesting against China necessarily because of the Hong Kong protests, but instead making a lot of deals, becoming partners with China, and China is getting even more power, and no one wants to upset it.
We could also see, like, in the US media, people getting repercussions for speaking out against China as well, so we can see that their influence, of course, also extends very largely. And as we see, this isn't just a West versus East kind of narrative, don't you think?
Would you say that this is generally an internal affair, or do you think it has more global implications?
I don't think, if we see this problem in long term and short term, I think it's very much internal and domestic for China, and the effects are on China only. But this could also be seen as a watershed where China is testing the waters and seeing the limits. And after this long term, this could give them, if they succeed, the boost that they need to continue their expansion. Though, if expansion even is their goal, we don't know, because one of the main problems of Chinese government is that they are so secretive.
It is quite clear. It's mostly, I mean, look at Taiwan, obviously. They have laid claim on that territory for about 50 years now. So it's clear, it's generally, if you talk about Chinese sentiments towards Hong Kong, it's definitely that it is a Chinese state, right? And they have previously, obviously, with the other territorial claims within the South China Sea region, the ASEAN region, they have laid claims in many of the territories, and their goal right now, obviously, is being such a powerful country with a lot of, being one of the P5 nations as well, they have currently a lot of economic power, but also political power when you talk about the global sphere.
That is what we've been talking about, and that is why the problem that we have is their lack of transparency.
Mm-hmm.
And their insensitivity towards the media, because what we see here is that, well, if we take the US for example, well, it's not a paragon of justice. We can see that the US government is affected by the media, and the media is always constantly criticizing and analyzing the government. But in China, there's a lack of this. There's a lack of transparency. Now, whilst it's not inherently means that China is bad, it does mean that China is unknown. And of maybe this is just Western anti-Chinese sentiment speaking, but the fact that we don't know also could mean that China could have any aim. But as we've seen previously through history, it's mostly territorial expansion. But how far will that go? And the lack of an answer here is the real problem that I see with China, at least.
All right. Okay, so talking about America, we got to talk about the elephant in the room. The peach. The Trump. Trump has been impeached today, in fact, from the House of Representatives, and the two main reasons for the bills that have been passed are the abuse of power for his effort to withhold taxpayer money from Ukraine and get the country to investigate his political rival, former Vice President Joe Biden, and the obstruction of Congress for his refusal to cooperate with the oversight investigation. And these two bills were passed this was voted present very recently, and the obstruction of Congress was passed, I think, today. So, this is obviously isn't the end. The impeachment process in America is a very long and arduous journey. The next stage would be the senator's vote. So what do you think about that? Do you think it will go through? And keep in mind that the senators are mostly conservative. Republicans.
Mm.
Wait. Yeah.
Do
you think it will pass?
Me? No. The senators, as we see, having a large amount of conservatives, will give Trump some kind of protection, I think, and that will be enough for this not to go through. However, I think it's still an important step of action against his transgressions.
Also,
but has Trump actually done anything that warrants, like, think about it though?
I do, and I give you the trade war with China. That is something that has negatively affected the U.S. economy.
Okay. You could also argue for other administrations before.
Yeah,
there are a couple of bad things, but what exactly has he done?
The thing is, impeachment requires a huge mishap, basically, because from my knowledge, there hasn't been that many impeachments.
No.
Okay.
No.
So, especially given the conservative Republican Senate it's going to take a lot to finalize this impeachment and to make the moves that are intended.
But also, one of the things that he's done is like continuous lying. We can see here with the Ukraine, him telling the public that he didn't tell them to quid pro quo. But then later on, we can see that he actually did. This is a huge problem and a lack of transparency where transparency is needed the most.
Oh, we'll see. Do we want to shift back the conversation to China?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. So, there are two things that I intended to bring up, which have been already brought up. One is this sort of division of where this kind of trading with the devil sort of trade alliances that have been going on with China, that economically everybody is gaining from Chinese trade, and these countries are seeing development when they start trading with China, and that has been increasing greatly in Europe, even in Africa and Asia. But at the same time, if we're talking especially about Western democracies, it's also a trade with the devil, as you said. There is a lack of transparency, and not every government agrees to the way China treats its people, even if it's very unclear how they treat their people. And the recent media coverage of Muslim camps hasn't helped in that regard either. So what's your opinion on that?
I believe that to some extent these developing countries should deal with the devil, as you say, mainly because there is actually things to be gained. And I think it's in both China's and the other countries' interest to have a mutual trade agreement.
And I mean, we see that countries that hasn't really been that experienced with the Western style democracy and ideology, they don't seem to care too much. And also they don't have they can't care too much because they need the development that the trading with China gives them. For example, African nations have basically said that trading with China has been way more beneficial for them than trading with gaining aid from Western democracies that have tried to help but have the wrong way, apparently.
Yeah. And of course, the Chinese trade, in my eyes, is also better than Western reparations, whilst not explicitly reparations, that's how I see their aid.
A lot of countries do rely on China for their, Sri Lanka, for example. They, I think in this year, actually, they lent out a port, a very big port, for about, I think it was $4 or $5 billion to China for 99 years. So it's obviously, it is a huge country and it's looking to expand. It's looking to gain power economically and both politically, and it's doing so very effectively by gaining control over strategic locations like this. I think it's very evident that they have an expansion strategy in their mind. And what can be said of it? What can we say about that?
Well, we can say that the status of the US as a global power is diminishing, that is known, but that China now actively is trying to take
the
position.
Yeah, and it is going to lead to an imbalance, and I think US needs to put a bit of pressure through embargoes and trade things because there is an imbalance of power here.
There's an imbalance of power towards the U.S. in other deals as well. We can see that throughout history.
Not economically. They
in Eastern or Southern America, we can see the U.S. Well, through history, we have seen that the U.S., of course, have been a relatively bad hegemon.
From my stance, this seems like that basically Trump's ways as so far has been to, yes, make some trade deals with the countries and to go on the same way as China is doing, a kind of positive relationship to other countries, but at the same time, it's the protectionist measures haven't.
I mean, this has been going on. This has been going on forever, actually. 1980s, in fact. Bill Clinton, his administration, when China joined the World Trade Organization in 2001, he said that. I think he said something along the lines of them not. He accused them of not failing to comply with the global trade rules and demanded that the Chinese first resolve a list of outstanding trade grievances with Washington, including opening its markets and protecting copyrights and patents. Moving fast forward to 2008, the Obama administration also talked about the World Trade Organization issued a formal ruling against China for requiring foreign automakers operating there to buy most components from local suppliers or face higher tariffs. And the Obama administration obviously confronted these issues in 2010, and it opened an investigation into whether the Chinese government was subsidizing its alternative energy companies such as solar and wind turbine in violation of WTO guidelines that it agreed to. But it's been a long-standing problem, and now I think it's the right time to be a bit more strict, because there is clearly an imbalance of power that needs to be resolved. Otherwise, we would have just
a Chinese world power, no?
It is already a world power.
No, but as the major world power.
Yeah. Well,
but we can already see that they're eventually just delaying the inevitable.
Yeah, we can see that China has basically, if we want, the way we can see this growth is that China has made trade partners, and basically, we can say that a not so political but economical kind of satellite states, you would say, all in the world. And at this point, for many of those countries, it's just the decision whether they side with China or US just depends on who offers the most money, basically. But the problem is that China also gains money by already having made these agreements, these extra agreements and partners in trade, and so it's kind of logarithmic growth at that point, and it's going to be hard to unbalance something that has gained so much momentum, I would say, if it's a goal to do that. Which from our eyes, it seems to be a goal, because we don't disagree with the ideology for the most part.
All right, I think we should cut now. I think it's been...
It's great. That's some good...
Yeah, don't swear. Okay, wait. Next time, we'll be talking about climate change, the CAB protests that are happening started in India right now, and...
What was it, Europe's future? Or is that later?
The future of the EU.
Yeah. Future of the EU, yes. Yeah. After Britain leaves, or if it does, in fact, leave.
It leaves.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
okay.
All right, that's great.
Okay.